Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's the newest spirit.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man. You got a question for RLM?
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Global, that's right, I said Global Happiness Specialist, Inner Peace Practitioner. I'm going to throw in Oracle, but most importantly, a student, an ongoing student, about happiness. Who is she? Happiness Specialist, the nerve. Who does she think she is? It's impossible to be happy all the time. No. Well, that's what we're going to talk about. And this happiness, let me be very clear. When I talk about happiness, because let me just warn you right off the bat. Put your seatbelts on. You will get triggered listening to me. You will get triggered. Your buttons will get pushed. This message and what I have to share is controversial. It's disruptive, it's contentious, it's not popular with the masses, but I don't care. I'm sharing with you the truth about happiness. All change starts in the mirror. And that's why people aren't just rushing to make changes, because it does start with you. You are the one responsible for your own inner peace, for your own happiness, for your contentment. But let me get back to happiness before I'm shot out of a cannon already. We have a guest today, and usually it's just me and when people call in, but now we have a guest, and it happens to be my best friend. His first name is Sid, but I'm just going to call him Sid for the show. But let me just share, before we bring Sid in, my definition of happiness. My definition is the ability to vibrate an energy of peace, an energy of contentment, regardless of what happens, regardless of any external circumstances. And happiness is a state of mind. Happiness is a state in mind. It is an energy. It is a vibration. It has nothing to do with anything, oh, I just won the lottery, now I'm happy. No, this is all internal work. And that's why it's very challenging. You know, when you're born, you're given a name, a nationality, a gender, a religion, a culture, and then you spend the rest of your life identifying with that program and identifying with that identity, your name, your nationality, your religion, your race, your culture, and throw in a lot more things too. But this show and what I like to shed a light on is the programming, because it is the programming that causes the unhappiness. This is the programming that causes the angst and the anxiety and the discontent. And so that I'm a program buster. When I say the good news is, my dear audience, and the good news is that happiness, along with inner peace, along with contentment, is a practiced skill. Just like any other skill, being a writer, a speaker, a professional athlete, a musician, a landscaper, a master chef, it is a practice skill. And all I'm here on this little show, Reality Spirituality, is to share with you what to practice. You know, I've heard this, and I used to believe it a lot, that when I find my purpose, I'll be happy. Well, I used to think that when I found my purpose, I'd be happy too. That's another program. So I began the search. This was decades ago. I began the search for my purpose. What's my purpose? Why am I here? Well, that search lasted for decades, and it took a while. But I finally found the truth about happiness and my purpose. And this is my purpose. I discovered that my purpose is to grow and expand my consciousness. My purpose is to accept others and myself without criticism or judgment. My purpose is to feel in every moment, or vibrate in every moment, an energy of satisfaction and contentment. My purpose is to be okay with uncertainty, to trust, and to live in the present moment. Just like I did when I was born. My purpose is to look in the mirror for solutions, not out there. I don't need the world to change. I don't need a person to change. I don't need my best friend to change. I am the one that is responsible for changing. And so my purpose is to surrender in every moment without resistance, and then to celebrate growth. And my purpose is to vibrate an energy of peace and contentment regardless of the circumstances, and then to laugh and enjoy this life with whatever it brings, and then to practice all of this that I just mentioned over and over and over again until I breathe my last breath. And speaking of breathing my last breath, there's a very famous study, and I usually start the show with this. There's a very famous study. You can Google it. It was called The Five Most Common Regrets of the Dying. So a hospice nurse in Australia, she had, of course, patients that had days to live, weeks to live, months to live, and she asked them, what are your five biggest regrets? And these five regrets kept coming back over and over and over again. And so she wrote a book about it. How many of you are interested in knowing the five most common regrets of the dying? Raise your hand. Well, that's not everybody, but that's okay. That's enough. Two people are interested. The first most common regret of the dying is, number one, I wish I would have pursued my dreams and aspirations and not the life others expected of me. Second one, I wish I didn't work so hard. Shout out to all you workaholics. The third one is, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings and speak my mind. The fourth one is, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. I always do a side eye next to that one, only because I've outgrown my friends. Nothing wrong with them. Scratch the outgrown. It's just not compatible energy. The energy isn't compatible anymore, but that's just me. And then the last one is, I wish I would have been happier. I don't know about you, but that's a very powerful testimony as to what was important to these people, these patients, that next stop is not in this dimension. So let's get back to this happiness thing, and I already warned you that you may get triggered, and you know, I get triggered too, and in fact, I'm going to start off by sharing a story that started this whole topic. It was about 3 days ago, and if I'm a happiness specialist, I don't just walk it. I mean, I don't just talk it. I have to walk it. First, I have to say it right. Then I can walk it. First, I have to walk it. So here I am. I'm at a park. This was about 3 days ago. And I was dumping the trash out, and I'm sitting in my car. And, yes, I had rollers in my hair, and I had my PJ bottoms on. But I was looking at this gentleman, this youngster, I would say. He was maybe early 20s, late teens, and he was playing basketball by himself, and I was watching him, and he was skilled. I could tell that he was either on a team. He wasn't just a regular street basketball guy, meaning, you know, the guys that get together and play. No, this guy had skills. He was either on a college team, or he played basketball in high school. You could just tell he was doing jump shots, turn around, bobbing the head, pretending that somebody else was on court guarding him. So it was, and I was really entertained by what he was doing, and I was watching him for a while. And then I said, I wonder if I should just get out and talk to him. You know, not talk to him, but just let him know that I appreciate his skills and that I enjoyed watching him. And I sat in the car maybe about 10 minutes or so, really enjoying looking at this youngster. I got out of the car. That's right, I still had rollers in my hair. I got out of the car, and I walked a little bit closer to him. And I said, you're really, really good. I love watching you. And he said, thank you. You know, he stopped. He responded. He said, thank you. And then I asked him, I said, well, who's your favorite player? And this is where it started. He said, LeBron James. Now, after all of that time of enjoying this youngster, watching him make moves that I only see on a professional, you know, a professional basketball court when the professionals are playing. After all that, when he said LeBron James, I was triggered because don't tell anybody. I know happiness suffers. I'm still working. I'm still practicing. I'm still learning how to accept people that my ego has an issue with. So as soon as he said LeBron James, because I'm not a LeBron James fan, and it has nothing to do with his basketball. Let me just say this, back up a little bit. I used to be a LeBron James fan until he started speaking and voicing his opinions about political opinions. Let's just say that. And so now, I know, judgment, I'm owning it. And as soon as he said that, I just went from this joyous, enjoyable moment to, I mean, everything was just, I'm not going to say ruined, but instantly my mind shifted. In fact, let me bring my guest on. I'm going to bring you on, Sid, but I'm going to keep you muted. Hold on just a second. Let me bring you up. Okay, there you are. Let me put you on mute again. Okay, you're in the queue. Just instantly from yay to oh. How many of you out there can relate to what I just said? Flying high one moment and then an instant switch. And this was about a individual. So I went from really enjoying the kid to, oh, he's a LeBron James fan. And then I said, why? He said, he's a great player. Have you watched him? His skills. And he just admired LeBron James. And I walked back to the car. I put my head down and I said, because this isn't the first time something like that has happened with me. And I said, universe, this has got to stop. This instantly being triggered by something someone says or having a judgment. Number one, having a cause, having a side, having a preference. And now I'm caught up in yay to ugh. I said, this has to stop. I don't want to be triggered by this. I mean, I'm 45 years of this study, 45 years, 4 decades and 5 years of studying the truth about happiness. I'm ready to have a new practice. I'm ready for that to end. In fact, one of the things, this was decades ago when I started this, you know, asking the universe, I always ask the universe, I just don't want to be irritated anymore. Can you take that away? Can you take away my irritation? Can you take away that vibration? You know, oh, that bothers me. I didn't want to feel that anymore. And I've asked the universe for that forever. Now, let me be clear again, because this is another, this is something else that people get triggered by. I use the term universe Some people say God. Some people say source, higher power, all that there is, spirit, whatever you want to call the energy that I'm talking about, feel free. It's not about the words for me. It's not about the words. Use your own words. Slip in higher source, higher power if you want to, or God if you want to. It's the same thing in my, that's what I'm letting you know. It's the same for me. So I'm talking to the universe and I said, help me with this. How do I let go? How do I let go of this irritation of somebody says something? I've got a program. And all triggers, let me just say this, all triggers are from the past. All triggers are from yesterday. So universe, how do I let go of these triggers? I don't want to be triggered. And before my wonderful audience says, well, that's just normal. No, it's not. It's a program. And backing up to the program that words have power and the program that thoughts are powerful. Words and thoughts are not powerful. Let me back up. Let me just do it separately. Words innately do not have any power. Innately they don't. You could criticize, you could insult, you can berate a baby, a year and a half, 2 years. They could care less. In fact, I shared this story. I've shared it before. In fact, Sid was there with me when I did this. This was maybe about 20 years ago, and I was giving a talk in a chiropractor's office, and this woman brought in her toddler, this little girl. She wasn't even two. She was still in diapers. And why a woman would bring her toddler in is beyond me. But it was a setup just so I could tell you the story right now. She brought this little girl in, and I was speaking about that words don't have power. I mean, that was my talk, that words do not have power. And, of course, the adults in the audience are, yeah, like 98% of the population. Yes, words are powerful, and I promise you I get it. I picked up this little girl, and I started insulting her. Now, before your eyebrows go up and you do the program, yes, I started insulting her. I told her she was stupid. I said, you're ugly. I said, you're not going to amount to anything. Hold on a second. Let me just check this. I said, you're not going to amount to anything. I said, and your parents are losers, too. I said a lot of other things. And meanwhile, the audience, of course, hands on the face, mouth hanging open, eyebrows up, and they were just offended, appalled, and insulted. But I put this little girl down, and she just kept playing. She could care less, and that's what I'm talking about. That's before the programming. And that's who all of us were, before the programming. So this thinking that words have power, let me ask you this. Who's more powerful, somebody that can be insulted, offended by a word, or someone who can't? Before I go any further, let me bring my guest on, because he worked with, this is my best friend, and he worked with this with me. Hold on just a sec. Let me do this, click on that. Okay. Welcome to Reality Spirituality, Sid. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I was sharing the story, and I even told you the story about the LeBron James incident. And one of the things we started talking about instantly was this thing with thoughts and how thoughts have been able to, in my life, yeah, their power. In other words, if I have a thought, it is going to be able to affect me. It is going. It affects me not only in my body, but it's in my mood, everything. So can you just share what your perspective is about this thoughts and what we talked about yesterday and the day before about thoughts not having any power?
Yeah, well, all right, let me get into it. The way I see it is that
you have a thought, or a thought comes into your mind, and that motivates, well, that thought needs a host in order to express itself. And a thought like a thought of, okay, there's an example. The child is walking down the sidewalk on a rainy day, and the thought comes into his mind to jump into a small puddle of water, to splash. I've seen children do this, so they must have these thoughts. So that thought, if that thought came to me while I was going to work in my suit and my nice shiny shoes on and my tie, if that thought came to my mind to jump into the puddle while I was walking down the street, I wouldn't host that thought. That thought would just vanish into thin air because I would not host the thought. And if I don't host the thought, then I'm not going to react to the thought and jump into the puddle of water. However, the baby on the or the toddler, the 3-year-old, whatever you want to say, the 3-year-old on the other hand gets that thought into its mind, and its mind becomes a host to that thought. And all of a sudden,
let me just say this: you're saying host, H-O-S-T, host, a host to the thought, or another word could be vessel, a vessel to the thought. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, or a vessel to the thought. But what I'm trying to say is the thought needs a vessel in order to carry out what it wants to happen. If the monk, let me just go into this. If a monk sits in a cave and thinks about jumping into puddles, but he never leaves the cave, then those thoughts go nowhere. Nowhere, because there's no host in order to carry out the thought. So what happens? The thought just vanishes into thin air, just like it did when the thought came to my head, oh, jump into the puddle of water as you're walking down the street in your suit. That thought came to my head and vanished. And what I'm trying to say is the thoughts need a host. They need a body. They need and why would you say the child jumps into the puddle? Because the child's identity identifies with that action. Whereas when by the time I'm 50, my mind doesn't identify with that action anymore. So it needs and what is an identity? You touched on it earlier. You said, listen, you get your name, and then after that, you get this is when you were born, which has some meaning, and this is your religion. I'm going to give you, take that, and these are your parents. Okay, so that's your economic situation, and these are your grandparents. That is even an extension of your economic situation, along with their fears and so forth. So the things that you have. And all right, so we got your economics, we got your religion, we got your name, we got social security numbers and birth certificates and all those things. So this is who you are. And then if let's say, for example, okay, your body is 6'5", and you're 250, and it seems that you have an athletic build. All right, so you begin to identify with these characteristics. That's who. And if I ask you, who are you? That's who you would tell me. You would, I'm so and so and so and so and so. And these are my hobbies, and these are the things I do, and this is what you identify with. So if a thought comes into this athletic guy's mind, hey, let's see, let's go to the bakery and let's just spend the day eating cake. Let's do that. His mind is going to reject that. Because that doesn't fit into his identity. I'm trying to get to the NFL. You think I'm just
Let's just be really clear and give a better, not a better, but just give another example. Tom Brady. I mean, everybody knows he played to 45 years old, healthy, only doesn't eat tomatoes even, because tomatoes cause inflammation. And so you're talking about a high skilled professional athlete. Tom Brady is not going to sit there and eat a whole box full of donuts. So you're talking about their identity. And the identity includes religion, race, culture. Who are you, or who you see? Who do you see yourself as? And that identity is always underlying. Is it underlying? But where does that identity come? I didn't want to interrupt, but I just wanted to be a little bit better example than yours, buddy.
Oh no, that was a much better example, because that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm trying to get across. A person that's mine is conditioned. This is who he is. He's an athlete. He won't even eat tomatoes. He doesn't eat this. He's very conscious. When a thought comes in, hey, let's go to the donut shop, like you said, get a box of donuts, that thought just vanishes. That thought has no power. You have to identify with the thought in order for the thought to have power. And that's what I'm trying to get across.
And so when I went from being really excited and happy and looking at this guy and entertained to, oh, God, he likes LeBron. So what happened is that thought, just like The Exorcist or just like the Alien, came into that my ego, that thought needed my body to feel a certain way, to react a certain way, because if I didn't, then the thought would have had no power.
None at all. And an interesting thing about these positions that we take is these identities that we take. So once you set up an identity, the thing about it is that any information that comes in counter to the identity is immediately an enemy. That's how, I mean, Christian,
so you said immediately an enemy, which is, so whatever, how, who, because here we go. This is, it started with who am I, you know, be your, the whole buzz thing now is be your authentic self. But who is my authentic self? Who am I? Mm. And so when I say who am I, there was an identity. There was an identity that I held on to very, very tightly. Or how about this? My ego holds on to it because my ego needs my body also as a host, as a vessel to identify, or else the ego has no power. And when I feed my ego with, no, this is who I am, I can't change, I'm not, no, this is not what I do, this is impossible. It's like Tom Brady eating a million donuts. It's impossible. But when I identify with an ego's identity, then I'm robbing myself of even more possibilities of who I, in other words, I'm more than just this identity. And why am I only holding on to one identity? So when people say be your authentic self, what does that mean to you, Seth?
Well, okay, if you say be your authentic self to me, and you've known me for a long time, and so these are my characteristics that I define myself. I'm sensitive. I'm very spongy, and meaning that I'll take in the energy of the room. I'm kind. I'm passive aggressive. And I believe that my desires are noble. That's just in a nutshell. So that's who Sid is. And when I identify with Sid, anything counter to that. So for example, I'm kind. Well, when I see unkind people, I don't like them. Mm-hmm. That's who Sid. I can't see any good in them. That's what Sid does. But now that I'm aware of Sid and I know that I'm just not Sid, that I am the universe too. And I say that with humility. I don't know what that means exactly, humility, but whatever it means to you, take it as you will. But I say that like, I can identify with the source of this creation, and I see the source of this creation this identity is, and this is one scripture that I kind of I like a lot, and it says, you know, the universe allows the sun to shine on the good and the evil. It doesn't. It's accepting.
Say that again.
Well, it doesn't say universe, but God allows its sun to shine on the good and the evil. So it doesn't discriminate at all. You say, okay, in the final analysis, you're going to go to hell, and I that's a topic for another day, and I think that's just merely a state of mind. But however you would like to interpret it is okay with me. But I'm just saying, you have to interpret a thought. You have to identify with the thought in order for the thought to have any power. So the thought it exists, and I'm not denying that, but it is powerless without a host, without a vessel.
So the thought is powerless without a host, without a vessel. That is the whole point. That is the whole point of this talk today, is because the masses, thoughts are powerful. Thoughts create. Can we start talking about in slower with the speaking? Can we start only because you and I talk and we talk fast, but sometimes when people are listening. So will you share with the audience about this creating thoughts? Because the masses have this thoughts create things.
Okay. Well, let's break down thoughts. So you get the thought in your mind, and like I said, if you're sitting in a cave in Nepal, the thought will just stay right there, and more than likely nothing will happen if the person doesn't leave the cave. However, if the thought enters into the thought of a building a city like New York, enters into a architect's mind that is going to school in NYU and so forth, then that thought enters into a host that can actually make that thought a reality. And so the thought itself doesn't have any, it doesn't have an arm and a hand, and it can't swing a hammer, and it can't pour concrete. It can't do those things. It needs a host to do those things, and that is the process that the thought a thought of building a city like New York, given to a person in Nepal in the cave that doesn't plan on leaving the cave. It may have a strong vision in his mind, and I'll guarantee you that thought has entered millions of people's minds that just ends up just vanishing into the thin air. And then that thought may enter into the minds of several people that understand, that have the ability to carry out the mental capacity and the physical capacity and the financial capacity to actually build what was thought about. So I go back that there's a process. I'm not saying the thoughts aren't anything, but the thoughts cannot carry out the action without a body or a mind to do the process.
Okay, and your example was these monks. You know, you've heard about the Tibetan monks that just live and they just think and they just stay on. I don't even know where they live. Do they live in caves? But maybe they don't.
Well, I mean, they're in monasteries.
they're
monasteries or whatever you do.
Yeah, monastery. Yeah. Wherever they're living. So if they're sitting and they're just thinking, what you're saying is, I just want just to be. For clarity, so they're sitting there. These monks are just sitting and thinking and thinking. And if they just kept sitting there and thinking about building New York City, and they're just sitting there thinking, building about New York City, thinking about building. If nothing is going to happen without an action or from a host, from a vessel, from a person. So thoughts by themselves have absolutely zero power unless you provide them with a vessel to express. I gave these thoughts of, oh, God, LeBron. I gave the thoughts a vessel to enter my body and for me to feel bad, for me to feel the opposite of how I was feeling seconds before.
Wow.
And so that's really clear because the world says thoughts create. So, okay, everybody listening, please put your seatbelts on. Seatbelts. And put your crash helmets on and whatever type of protective gear you have, because this may hurt or not.
Mm-hmm.
Sid, can humans create with just their thoughts? Can humans create on this dimension? Can humans create?
There is nothing on record that shows a human has created anything. Nothing.
Hold on a second. Everybody's upset now. Say that again just so we can upset them more. Go.
All right. There's nothing on record. There is nothing on record that you can show me that a human created. I didn't say there was nothing on record that a human hasn't manufactured, that a human hasn't discovered, that a human hasn't taken one molecule, mixed it with another, and created and produced something out of it. I got all of that. I'm talking about from nothing to something. Where is the item that man has created? Don't tell me about combining atoms. Those were already here. I don't want to hear about you put this molecule.
It was already here. Keep going.
It was already here. You didn't create it. Now you harnessed it. Yes. And you learned how to use it to your advantage. Yes. But created it? No. And so you're not creators. The human race, they're not I'm creative. Yeah. But you didn't create the colors. So you're a painter and you're creative. You made a beautiful painting. Right on. But did you create the colors to make the painting? Did you create the material that you apply the paint to? Did you do those? I said created, not show me the results of a creation. No. So you're you have to take a step back on the ability to create. I think that man has taken enters into the realm of a universal mind. That mind is a creating mind. And unless you have that mind, this mind that we possess, it hasn't created anything that I know of. And I'd love to hear what has come out of, if someone else discovers something.
Yeah, hold on. We're going to take about a 10-second reset. Let's maybe put this right back here. Hold on. What happens is I get kicked out of the system if I don't keep it active. Okay, I'm back in. Okay, and so what you're saying is that a human creating something out of nothing. And you know what's interesting? What's other interesting, Sid, because this show is broadcast on Wisdom and then also Blog Talk Radio, which I totally forgot. If you want to speak with me live, it's area code 646-564-9619. Again, area code 646-564-9619. And the queue was filled with people in the seat. Now, I don't even know why, but as soon as you said, no, we're not creators, there are about three people that dropped off. But let me just be very honest. I'd have no idea why three people dropped off or dropped out, and that's another thing. I don't pretend to know. And the other part of being of the program is thinking that I know in this little head that I know why someone else, here we go, why someone else is behaving a certain way. I mean, I used to know that or think that I knew about other people's motivation and other people's reasoning. I'm telling you right now, I have no idea why three people just left. It doesn't even matter because it's not about numbers. It's not personal. This is an impersonal universe. And whether you, and again, this is my perspective, this is Sid's perspective, and you don't have to have the perspective. But what Sid is asking is show me something that a human has created out of nothing. And you may say, well, a school or a hospital or a, you know, people think they're creating the vision boards and all of that or something, but it still doesn't come from nothing. Is that what you're talking about, Sid?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, of course. If you create a school, well, then you're going to need a lot of materials to do that.
Now, let's go back to thoughts not having any power, because for me it was revolutionary. That means that before I get annoyed or get angry or get bothered or irritated or however, there is always a thought. Before, prior to any emotion, there is a thought. And so what I'm understanding is that thought needs a vessel to act out. And if there is no vessel or if there is no host, then that thought has zero power. Correct?
I'll put it like this, and I kind of simplified it, and I'll look you have to hit the thought comes to your conscious mind, and you have to hit the accept button. Listen, the thought comes into my mind. I've just been cut off. The lady pulled out in front of me. She's rude. The thought comes into my mind. Blow your horn and let her know how you feel, silly woman. I have to hit the accept button. Let's stop pretending that I had no power. You know, now it's so quick that you have very little time to think. I'll grant you that. I mean, listen, if you're not aware that this is the process, then you will just do what automatically happens and blow your horn and yell out a profanity or whatever you do, that will happen in seconds. But if you're aware, then I've practiced this, and I'm not saying I'm a master by any stretch of the imagination, but I am aware of my thoughts coming into my mind and me hitting the accept button. I have to accept to be sad. I have to accept it. Oh, no, there's no acceptance. I have a program. And the program, when I receive a thought of death, there's a program that goes with that, that our culture, that our religion gives to us. There you will rarely see any culture celebrating a person's death, because that hasn't been celebrating. I'm talking about throwing a party, having cake and ice cream and some music. People don't celebrate death like that in that way on average, because that thought is not a part of our culture. Human culture, not just any particular single culture. So when that thought comes into your mind of death, we are conditioned in this society to become sad, to give condolences. These are things that this is just the program. If a person wasn't on that program and came from another
planet. Let's exaggerate for a minute. And when you told him someone died and he started to smile and hug you, like, not with a sympathetic hug, but with a hug of some type of excitement, I'm a program robot. I'm sorry. I'm going to be offended. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You have to hit the accept button. And at least be aware. And if you say, well, I can't do that right now, I have to be who I am. Listen, I don't have a problem with it. Do your thing. But as awareness becomes stronger and stronger, you'll be able to see the accept button. There, you have to accept these thoughts before they become manifestations.
And you're saying accept, A-C-C-E-P-T, accept the thought. And so that was a great example with death. That was a perfect example. And there are countries, civilizations, I don't know about countries, but civilizations that do celebrate death. After a person dies, they do have a celebration, but very, very rarely. And so what you're saying is that when someone, after death, you hear someone dies, it doesn't matter whether it's somebody close to you or that death is a program that automatically snaps. And what you're saying is that there is an instant acceptance of, now I act sad, now I grieve, now I give sympathy. And if you notice when someone mentions that friend of theirs died, there is an instant automatic program that hits you. What to say, how to act, even if you're at a funeral, there is a way to act, and all of that is behind the program. I'm not saying that the program is good or bad, but just recognize the program. So before the emotion, there is a thought, and before you even get to the emotion, you have to accept that now I'm going to act in this programmed fashion.
Exactly. And I break the thought process down like that so that there's a conscious awareness now that now there's free will. Now you have free will when you're aware of that. But when you're not aware of that, why would you call that free will? If the process happens so quickly that it just triggers things, I mean, you don't have time to think about an accept. Have you heard anyone talk about an accept button of a thought? No, I'm not saying that I just came up with it on my own. I'm saying that we don't teach our children. We're not taught that. You have a choice. You could actually not accept the thought. What? Yeah, you can do that. Or you can choose to accept the thought. Thoughts that you reject, you can say, now I accept those too. You can. What I'm trying to say is that it can be done. Now, culture, religion, identity, it makes it almost impossible.
Well, it's not impossible if, and when this show is about happiness, and when I say happiness, it's an energy of contentment and an energy of inner peace. And so when that, and I'm speaking only for myself, and that is my number one priority, my number one commitment, and I believe for you too. And so when that is a priority, I prioritize inner peace. I am definitely monitoring. And this self-awareness, this living consciously, boy, oh boy, it's exhausting. It's exhausting being conscious every moment. It's just tiring. But when you practice it enough, it becomes, at least for me, it becomes an identity. It's easy to be conscious. I'm conscious all the time. So this self-awareness is another practice. So what you're talking about is being so aware that you have this thought, and before you even press the button, I accept this thought, to allow it to travel into your body to let you feel a certain thing, whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's happy, whether it's sad, that automatically you have to say, I accept. I accept what this thought brings, what this thought brings. And here, thought, I'll host you. I'll let you use me as a vessel to express yourself.
Yeah. Exactly. That's all.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was just agreeing with you.
Well, stop agreeing with me and agree with me.
Okay, I'm going to do that now.
anyway,
sorry about that. But yeah.
Go ahead. This is revolutionary for me.
Because we've been taught that I'll get the system. But we've been taught, you know, that once you accept your identity, and you see people break out of it. There are examples of people breaking out of their identity. Gandhi was raised one way and lived his adult life another way. There's examples of millions of different people. That was just one person that came up top of my head. But what I'm trying to say is that in the journey, clinging to who you are prohibits you from receiving thoughts that you don't identify with. And I'm not saying that you have to accept and agree and act out every thought. But when your mind is open, you'll find a lot of truth coming from all different directions. And then you'll find things that you don't, you know, that you see differently and you may not apply. And it just opens you up to a world of what I call choices. And when you have an identity, there is no choice except the one you identify with. And I know, and that may sound as if, why wouldn't you want to live like that? And listen, more power to you. But to live in a way where you can actually, I believe, like the universe does, it sees it all, and it allows its sun to shine on all of it that you call good and I call bad. It allows the sun to shine, and that's what being able to hit the accept button does. It allows you to see all of it. All right, Jimmy.
So what you're saying is this because I identified with Rebecca Norrington, this woman who I would never do this, I would never act like that, and now just being so open to letting go of the identify, letting go of the name, letting go of this person who I identified with for decades. And let me just say that this letting go of the identity scares my ego to death. My ego needs me to identify with someone, what I would do, what I would never do, to live. And the ego needs those stories. The ego needs an identification. And I'm here to tell you, sorry, ego, you don't get it anymore. I'm not identifying with the ego and what the ego wants me to identify with. I'm open to all possibilities, and that's what you're talking about. And especially this thing about free will, we talk about free will. Well, the free will comes where there is a thought, and you have the free will to either choose to accept the thought, or meaning accept the thought and allow the thought to use your body, to use you as a vessel, or not. Is that what you're talking about?
You nailed it. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And but the thing is, this thing about free will, where does this free will, I'm not just talking about you have a free will to choose, because even before that, you have to recognize, I have to recognize that I'm programmed to react a certain way. I'm programmed to think a certain way. That thing about me not liking this kid because now LeBron is his favorite player, that's all a program from my past. So this free will, yes, but it happens in the present moment, and it happens with the awareness of what my ego wants to happen. Because what is my ego? Just this entity, it is a separate entity, that is always discontented, that is always dissatisfied, that is never happy, that is looking for, needing something else. There is something else, something is wrong with this moment. No, I need more in this moment. I'm not giving that ego any more fuel. I mean, it's already, I'm 67. It's time to let this shit go. So the free will comes from right when you have the thought. Let me just say this. I forgot to mention this. I'm not my thoughts. They're not my thoughts. They are a huge, I was going to say cesspool, a huge, they're not mine. Whatever I think, what the thoughts have come in, they've been thought hundreds, thousands, hundreds of years ago. And thousands of years ago, I'm not coming up with a new thought. So I'm not going to say these are my thoughts. This is my identity. No, I've let go of that, identifying with my thoughts too. You mentioned it earlier. You said Sid is kind. Sid is noble. Sid is passive aggressive. All of those things that you, and would you like to share something, especially about this noble thing, this for a good cause. That was part of your identity too. Could you share a little bit about that and how you let that go?
Yeah. Well, and the noble thing, well, the good guy title came because I had a brother, an older brother, 2 years older, that was just the opposite. So he wasn't the good guy. He was the guy that drank the last orange juice and didn't replace it. He's the guy that, you know, hey, man, he got into trouble. I'll just say that. And I didn't get into trouble at all, ever. So I came, and it was because of a relationship with my mother, you know, separated from my father. You know, come on, we got to have somebody to take care of things. And so that was my job. So I was like, I grew up with this martyr mentality. So it made me, I bought into it so 100%. That's all I could ever identify with, was this nice guy.
The good, nice guy.
And I'm not saying with anything wrong with being a good, nice guy. It's not derogatory. I like Sid. He's a cool dude. I really do. It's just that I'm more than just Sid. That's all I'm saying. I accept him, but we, along the way, it was always, you know, high school, go on a date. Hey, you know, be a little cooler. You know, that's the girls. But, you know, be different than what you are. That's basically what you heard. That's what I heard. Anyway, so that was throughout my life, and now, you know, I'm taking on a different way of looking at life, and a different understanding of life and who I am. Open my mind up to as if I were the universe. And so if I were having a universal experience here on Earth, I could choose to identify with any type of energy that I chose to identify with. And that opened up the entire world. And I'm not saying that I'm able to, I have it mastered by any stretch of the imagination, but I've entered into that realm where just with my mind alone, I'm able to see and understand things that I never thought I could understand and see. And I'm far more accepting
of everyone and everybody. And I believe that whatever is going on, the universe is aware of and still allows the sun to shine. So that tells me if the universe is accepting, then I'm accepting too.
What you're saying is the sun shines on the good and the evil. The sun shines on the serial killer and the Pope. And let me, and just to wrap up again, let's go back to words, because one of the things in the title of this talk is words are not powerful either. I get a lot of pushback because 98% of the program population does teach and believe that, yeah, a word is very powerful. And so let's get back to that. And we also talked about a host and a co-host. So going back to a word being powerful, for me, there is absolutely nothing anyone can say to me that's a man-made word that can affect my vibration or my energy. Not anymore, used to, but the program was definitely that a word can make me feel a certain way. A word can insult me or offend me. But there is also a process, and listen, if I can do it, if Sid can do it, you can do it too with practice. When I say happiness is a practice skill, inner peace is a practice skill, it is a practice. And we practice all the time. There are no breaks, though. No breaks, no time off. No vacation, no none of that. It's a 24/7 job, job responsibility. But for me, and I'm going to speak for you too, Sid, is that it is the ultimate to be able to nothing external. Yesterday, you were visiting. He was visiting, and you know, if you're on the West Coast, there's a huge storm coming in from, I don't even know where it's coming in from, but it's going to hit California, and now it's raining here. I'm in Nevada. And so you were visiting, and your plan was to, well, your plan, you had a plane ticket to go home today. Now you're home now. That's why we're not doing this live together. But I'll never forget, you know, I came back to the car, and you were on the phone, and you said, well, I've got to leave. I have to leave tonight. I just got a plane ticket. Now, without any conversation, without any, why, it was just, okay, next moment. And that was just a small insight to letting all of this external stuff flow. There's no story behind it. There's no drama behind it. It was just, this is what has to happen. This is what is happening next moment. Would you like to add a little bit of that to that?
And well, only to give it a little perspective is that it was not always that case for me. I mean,
if you had said, you know, visiting me for 3 days and now you're just here for 2 days, my lips would have been poked out. I would have, why? All because we just have a limited amount of time together physically, I mean, in the same vicinity anyway, just being from a different state. And so now, yeah, you're right. Oh, I would have been, oh, are you kidding? Just, why?
Oh, and you know me, by the time you got back to the car, I would have had a rash because of my nerves and jumping around, and it would have disturbed my inner peace to the core. I wouldn't have been able to. Oh, I would have been so nervous. And the storm and this, I gotta go. Is that work? I was just so. That's the kind of guy. And listen, I'm not beating Sid up. He's a good dude. He's a good dude. But he has a lot of anxiety issues from time to time when those things like that happen. And it's just nice to be able to go to another identity, an identity that flows with the flow of life, the identity that understands that whatever is taking place, apparently the universe is okay with it at this moment and is allowing it to take place. And I should do the same. when I'm flowing as the universe flows. And I'm not saying that resistance doesn't take place. Resistance takes place too, if that's what you want to call it. But I put it like this: the obstacle becomes the way. So we just work right with the obstacle, and however that works, we just keep working, and then the obstacle becomes the way, and that's what we become. But the obstacle is not a separate entity where it's something to go fight. No, it's just you're in the path of the way. Now, I'll take you on like that, with that type of vibration, not with the enemy vibration.
And then the last thing I want to talk about, and if anybody wants to join the conversation on wisdom, just ask to join. But then the last thing is getting back to these words not having power, and words not having power unless there is a vessel, there is a host that gives the word power.
Can
you speak about, there was a time where Sid, that with, and then we'll wrap it up. But there was a time that Sid, I remember this time years ago. We've known each other for almost 30 years now. So there was a time when Sid needed to be talked to. This is a big thing out in the world. Needed to be talked to with respect. That word respect.
All righty.
People are so disrespectful and all of that kind of stuff. Can you please share? And that was Sid's identity. Can you please share your journey with this being disrespected and how that is not even an issue anymore? And again, this is practice. Happiness is a practice skill, and the practice starts with you making a commitment to thinking that there is some value to inner peace. There is value to feeling the vibration of contentment. There is a value to that energy. Because if you don't think that energy is valuable, then there's no reason to practice. Plus, here's another thing, though. There's also an addiction to drama. There is an addiction to feeling bad. There is an addiction to looking for what's wrong. There is an addiction to being negative. So there is an addiction to all of that. But I am saying addiction to it. But what is? Can you share your journey with this? Having to be respected to the point where you are now, thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna reverse the story. I'm just gonna start with the point, and then I'll go back to my childhood. But right off the top, I'll say this about being respected: the host, and there's a co-host. So the young man, I'm at the store. The young man hands me my money. And it falls out of my hand, and he walks away as if it doesn't matter. I don't know if he did it to disrespect me or not, but in my mind, let's just go ahead and say I did. Right off the top, I say, oh, you did that to disrespect me. He's the host because he has disrespect. He lets my money drop on the counter, and now I become his co-host because I feel his disrespect. And once I hit the accept button, it causes me to respond to the fact that the money didn't hit my hand and remain there. Which now I'm a host sending, and now he'll become my co-host of my disrespect, and we go back and forth. Back and forth. Now I'm going to go straight to my childhood. I was raised by a man that was born in 1901. My grandfather. He was the predominant male figure in my home. I lived with my grandparents. My mother, myself, my brother, we lived with my grandparents. So my grandfather gave me stories of being disrespected as a black man when he was a child. I would listen to these stories. These things actually took place. How he would have to actually get off the sidewalk
and allow people to pass him and then get back on the sidewalk. And that's just how it was in his life, where he lived in his town. And I'm a black male. He's a black male. And he lived in white and black people, but when white people walk, he had to get, so he walked down the sidewalk, he would have to get off, and he's heard white men call black men names that weren't their name, and the black men would have to respond, say boy or whatever the name may be at the moment, you respond to that. So my grandfather gave me these stories, so you grow up, I grew up with these thoughts of disrespect. And to how to and to be aware of them, it was very important to me. And throughout my life, high school, college, I went to a predominantly white college. I was aware of if a white guy walked by me, his vibrations and his energy. That was my awareness. I looked at, let me just be honest with you. I looked for disrespect, thinking that.
Hold on a second. That's big because I want to say this. These people, scratch that, this is my perspective. People that say I was disrespected, you just said something. They look for disrespect. People that say racism, they look for racism. So I get what you're saying. I just wanted to, that's a very powerful point. Thank you. Keep going.
Yeah, and it was absolutely true, too, because I did. I paid attention to it. Well, now, getting back to where I am now, I am the universe. I don't need your respect. I don't need nor want nor desire anything from you. You can be who you are, and it will have no effect on me. That's the ability to tap into the universal mind. The universal mind, if the guy was walking down the street and he was called something other than his name, I just have a feeling that the universe would just continue to walk as if the universe wouldn't lose its balance whether it was called by its name or not. That's what, and I don't lose my balance. Based on, I'm not going to be your co-host to any of your energy. I have to hit the accept button on that. And why would I? Here, I'm vibrating the way I'm vibrating, and you're vibrating the way you're vibrating, and you walk by me with your vibrations, and then I hit the accept button, they take on your vibrations? Why would I do that? Because you think you have no power. Because you can only identify with yourself. But if you could step out of yourself and begin to identify with a higher power, maybe an energy like the universal energy, then being disrespected and these types of things that you have to accept. Listen, I once again, let me go ahead and say, okay, you're being disrespected and discriminated to get a job. Well, what do? You just use your higher power. No, remember now, whatever is the obstacle in the way becomes the way. That's why they have lawyers and things of that nature. And if you think you're being discriminated against, you can take actions and blah, blah, blah. That's how you get I didn't say fight. I said becomes the way. The obstacle becomes the way. So you flow with that. But taking on an energy in order to flow through the obstacle, it's absolutely not necessary. That's all it's not necessary to, when you go to war, it's not necessary to have emotional rage when you're shooting at your enemy. As a matter of fact, the calmer you are, the better shot you'll be. It's not necessary for you're programmed to believe the emotion is necessary, but the emotion is not necessary to flow through the obstacle. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you for that. And now we're talking about respect, and then we're going to wrap everything up. Would you like sharing your story that has been in the presence, dignitary protection, and so in the presence of a lot of people in the world, and there was an incident one time when you were in England and you were watching Queen Elizabeth. Can you share, because I love that story with Queen Elizabeth and how, because this ties in with disrespect, and so we're using Queen Elizabeth as universal energy and the tie-in. Can you explain that story so people can understand what happened and what you experienced with this at that time in her presence?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And like you said, I retired from law enforcement, and I was a part of a governor's detail. So we had to go out to London, to Edan, Buckingham Palace, and several other places there. And so while I was advancing the Buckingham Palace, it just so happened that Queen Elizabeth was out taking a chariot ride. She was going, I don't know where she was going, but her chariot was preparing for departure and all the things. And it's a big event. And people were coming out to see her ride down the street so they could wave and so forth. Being of a security mind, I'm not there just, I'm surveying so when our detail arrives, things that we need to be looking for. And I happen to see a gentleman who seemed a little aggressive. It's just something you're able to spot when you do that type of work for long periods of time. You're able to see, you're looking for someone who's standing out. He was standing out. His movement stood out. The way he kind of was fighting through the crowd and weaving. He was determined to get to the front. There's a way to get to the front, but how he was doing it caught my attention. So I began to watch him very closely because I just, not that I was going to do anything. I was in a foreign country, but that's my nature. That's my job. That's something that comes second nature to me. So I'm watching him. He gets to the front. Now he's right by the curb. So when she walks, her chariot comes and he's on the side that she's on, which is really sparking my interest. And as her chariot approaches, this gentleman, he throws up the fuck you sign. And I mean, he's throwing it up and he's very animated. He's all over the place. And he's waving his finger. And she's, before she gets to him, she has a certain type of wave. She moves her hand from side to side, and she smiles. And I'm describing as if it looked robotic, but there's a personal touch to it. She's a professional, and so she and with the personal touch, she's waving, and the people are waving. But I'm watching this guy. He's throwing this sign. And he started before a chariot got there. So when she got there, and I was watching, I didn't see any weapons or anything. So it wasn't fear of him getting at her. It was just I was watching what he was doing, and I was watching her too. And I got to see. I wanted to see her expression. Give me some type of energy that you saw that and that you felt it to some degree. But when I watched her face. And since safety wasn't my issue, I actually got to watch both people, whereas normally I only get to watch the person throwing the fuck you side. I'm only going to pay attention to him, not her very much. But in this case, I was able to actually watch her too. Her expression never changed. Her vibration. I said earlier, I'm very spongy. I'm into that vibration thing and watching people and feeling through their eyes what they're feeling because I felt it before. So I'm into that. I do that. That's one of my traits. She never changed her vibration. And I came back and I couldn't wait to tell Rebecca. I was,
I couldn't wait to tell her about the story because the woman waved at him just like she waved at everyone else. And it wasn't like she tried not to look into his eyes either. She actually looked at him like she understood. It was an experience of, I said, oh, I've taken a lot from that story, and now that I've combined that story with the fact that I can tap into the universal mind and I'm not just Sid, and that I could be whomever I choose to be, I'm 360 degrees. That story is the highlight because I can choose to accept that energy or I can choose not to. I never thought that you could choose to accept or not accept. I only had one choice, and I had to accept it as disrespect, and I had to respond to it. I was a robot, and no longer. And it feels nice.
It's very powerful, and it reminds me. And then after that, unless anyone has questions, it reminds me of my famous story. It's not Queen Elizabeth, excuse me, but it is with, and I've shared this a million times. I'm going to share it again. So there's always new listeners, and thank you for finding me and listening and just sharing the show with Walter O'Brien. And Walter O'Brien, you can Google him. He's worth $50 million. He has an IQ of 197. And I was at a marketing networking event in September 2021, and he's stopped terrorist attack in the United States, and he's the inspiration for the CBS show Scorpion. I'd never even seen it or heard of him before, but for something about him, and especially with the 197 IQ, I said, I wonder if I could have a conversation with someone with 197 IQ. I was curious about that. And I asked to speak with him, and he was gracious enough to say yes, and I introduced myself. I said, hello, Mr. O'Brien. My name is Rebecca Norrington, and I'm a happiness specialist. I didn't say tee-hee. And then but before I could say anything else, he stopped me, and he said, I would never hire you to work in any of my companies because what you do is toxic. And when he said toxic, I started laughing. I said, happiness specialist, toxic. It was the same kind of, my vibration didn't shift with his words. My vibration didn't shift with his description of me or his judgment of me. I was curious. I'm toxic, happiness? Okay, what else? Tell me more. What other opinions do you have of people that are looking for happiness, or not looking for happiness, but happiness, the truth about happiness. And I said, and he proceeded to tell me that I've wasted 35 years of my life pursuing and studying happiness. He told me I've contributed zero to this planet. I mean, maybe 5 feet away from each other. We're just around a table talking. I've contributed zero to the planet. Searching for happiness and inner peace is delusional. What I've accomplished can't be measured. Therefore, I've accomplished nothing. And that was one of my favorites. He said I was selfish. And with everything that he said, I'm telling you, my vibration, my energy didn't shift at all. So it's not this miracle when... When you choose to prioritize inner peace and contentment, there is absolutely nothing that can penetrate when you're on your game, when you're practicing. And so how was I able to just laugh, and how was I able to let go? We talked about it earlier. Words are not powerful. He can't compliment me. He can't insult me. Oh, and by the way, this is what I sometimes forget to tell. I took a selfie with him. That night when he, quote, I'm using air quotes, just with one hand because I'm holding something with the other hand, so I can only use one hand to use air quotes. That evening was one of the best evenings of my life because this practice works. And what is the practice? The practice is to eliminate all the programmed behaviors that have been proven to subtract from your inner peace, from your happiness, from your contentment. That's coming along with this book that I'm almost finished with. It's going to be out in 2 months. It's called Program for Unhappiness. So words don't have power, and it's never personal. I don't care if somebody's calling you by your name, if they're screaming right at you. It's still not personal. And like you said earlier, Sid, there's 360 degrees in a circle. I can have 360 perspectives about every single moment. So why am I only choosing one perspective? Because my ego only can choose one perspective. But if I'm not my ego, if I'm more than this human identity, I have an infinite amount of perspectives I can use. So no, Mr. O'Brien, your words, your insults, your disrespect, which I don't even call it, it was an experience because all disrespect is a judgment. Disrespect is a judgment. I can't be disrespected. It's impossible. I can't be offended. It's impossible. But if you're programmed, you believe that you can. And Sid, thank you for that. And now I'm going to wrap up. Was there any last words you would like to share with the audience or things that we didn't cover?
No, not really. I'm good, and you know, just thanks for the opportunity.
And thank you, Sid. Thank you so much for coming on and your time and your sharing the stories. And so that's my best friend right there, everyone. And I've talked about him before, but now you got to hear him. And again, I'm not pretending to have all the answers. All I'm saying is this is another way to respond. You are either reacting to life, which is a program react, or you're responding. Responding requires self-awareness, requires consciousness, it requires a pause, it requires all of that. So it's totally up to the individual. Happiness is a practice skill. Happiness is a practiced skill. And so that's the end of today's show. I want to thank you for listening. Reality Spirituality is heard every Sunday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Follow me on Twitter at RL Norrington. LinkedIn. My Instagram handle is Reality Spirituality. Oh, and I'm going to be on Instagram Live this Friday. I'm going to be interviewed this Friday. I don't have the link yet. Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Yay! And you'll get to see my mug and my lips moving live in action. And so Instagram is Reality Spirituality. My YouTube channel is a work in progress, but feel free. There are a couple of videos on that channel. And my first book, Reality Spirituality, The Truth About Happiness, can be purchased on Amazon. And the book that I'm writing now is Program for Unhappiness. And that's going to be out hopefully the next two months. And until next week, my dear audience, I just want you to remember who you are. You are a physical extension of the universe. Your conscious energy, you're always evolving, always changing, always growing. Love is patient and love is kind. Be patient and be kind to yourself by accepting yourself in every moment. Be your own best friend. And remember, you cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. It is about the journey. You've been listening to Reality Spirituality with yours truly, Rebecca Norrington. And remember, happiness is a practice skill. And I promise you, the more you practice, the more peace you're going to find. And your experience in every moment reflects on what you practice. Have a conscious week.
Yeah. Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah.
Spirituality.
It's a new experience.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Reality.
Now we get